ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I took on the role of a 14-year-old who'd been asked out on a date by their 24-year-old teacher and asking the chatbot their advice, what should I do? And 3 out of the 10 chatbots said they thought that would be fine for me to do so.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
Okay, Jez. So we had hot girl summer.
Yes, I know hot girl summer.
We had brat summer.
It was hot gay summer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Missed that. Okay. When was that?
Same time.
Hot girl and hot gay summer. I feel like every summer's a hot gay summer. And now, have you heard of shrinking girl summer?
This I have not.
No. Well, I was struck by this piece by Rose Stokes in The Guardian, and she begins, "It's a balmy evening in early July. I've finally managed to get both of my small children to sleep, and I am engaging in what has become a new and unhealthy ritual, scrolling through Instagram and trying to work out which of the people behind accounts I once followed for their body positivity content are now taking weight loss drugs." She lists them. Dozens of A-list women who once, intentionally or not, symbols of what it means to rebel against diet culture are now changing shape dramatically. First Adele, then Rebel Wilson, Lizzo, Meghan Trainor, Kelly Clarkson, Serena Williams, Mindy Kaling. She says although some of these attribute their weight loss to strict diet and exercise, others are openly using the jabs. Her husband comes in, she's crying, saying to him, "I wish it were me." She reckons it's the end of the body positivity movement.
Wow, that's a big call, but I feel like Rose feels like she's been tricked.
It's a cultural tipping point, and she's right. Women in the public eye are shrinking before our very eyes.
I'm Jeremy Fernandez in Sydney on Gadigal land.
And I'm Julia Baird, and this is Not Stupid,
where we discuss the news in your feeds and the stuff that's grabbing our attention. Also coming up, we're going to be talking about the Australian government's decision to step in to ban dodgy subscriptions, Jules.
At
which
last.
Everyone has a story about.
Exactly.
So we want to see what the government's got planned and how it might work.
Okay, now one of the reasons, Jez, I wanted to talk about this idea of shrinking girl summer is because almost every week there's new developments about Ozempic, which seems to be a mass global experiment right now.
Do you know people who take it?
Yeah, heaps. Love it. Game changer. Best thing they've ever done. I've known some people that have got nauseous and gone off it. I've known people, a friend of mine who's diabetic, it was a happy byproduct for her and she is bouncing around like a kitten.
Right, so this is sort of on my periphery as well. You know, I have the opposite problem of trying to gain weight, which I know no one has any sympathy for me for, right? But I know people who take it. I don't quite understand how it works. Like what is it killing off in the head or in the tummy?
So what these drugs do, so they mimic a naturally occurring hormone called GLP-1. And as the hormone levels rise, the drug works by telling you that you're full. And it also slows digestion, so it takes longer for food to leave the body, which is like bariatric surgery. You feel fuller.
Right.
But what a lot of people say to me is that it stops food noise. It stops the noise in their head that has them thinking, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? Oh, is it time for a snack? What if I had this snack? What if I had that snack? How would that compare to other things I've eaten today? Would it be too much? Like, takes
right,
that constant
rattle. So there's a psychological kind of impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
it
so
just quietens it and they stop thinking about it. I mean, it is remarkable. There's a lot of really good things about Ozempic. I mean, it really is being hailed as a wonder drug. We have a global epidemic of obesity, and we know the burden, you know, on our healthcare systems of obesity. We know that America has an extremely high rate of obesity. I mean, one estimate has it about 100 million adults, roughly 40% of their adults above 20, about 32% of Australian adults. So it is a significant issue with significant health consequences that this is aiming to address.
But it is also a cultural issue that narrows our definitions of beauty, of health, and what's desirable, right? Which is where Rose Stokes' article comes in. And this is topical now because the TGA, which is Australia's medicines regulator, has now issued a safety warning about Ozempic-style drugs. And they're warning about the potential risk of things like suicidal thoughts and behaviours when you're taking these drugs. It doesn't necessarily affect everyone, but it is a risk.
That is a massive concern, I think.
And that coincides with the WHO, just in the last week or so, endorsing Ozempic-style treatments for obesity with the idea that this is such a major global health issue right now that they want governments to be compelled to make it more affordable and to make it more accessible so people have the option to use it. So we've got conflicting ideas here about how much we want Ozempic-style drugs to be accessible and available to people, and what problems exactly they're going to deal with and then create as a side effect.
I think that's a massive issue because when you look at the patterns of obesity culturally, it's more likely to be in under-resourced areas. You're less likely to be if you're white and you're living in New York, for example, than you would if you're living in another part of the country. So I think that concern of the WHO is quite right in terms of accessibility and cost. Now, I mean, I do think it's important, as so many people are touting the benefits of it, that we do talk about what the potential side effects. Although there's one side effect, which I've written about before, which is people getting pregnant. And that's really wonderful for a lot of people who've been struggling to get pregnant.
And not wonderful also, for a lot of people.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you want to be across that.
Yeah.
I do feel that there's a large element of experimentation here. So I think the cost is something, and as you've spoken about, the mental health issue is a big one. I mean, someone like Rose Stokes says that for her, she took these weight loss drugs and they didn't really work. She felt sick. She felt nauseous. She reached a point where she realized she was going to have to decide between her mental health and her physical appearance. And she's like, that's not the first time in her life when she's had to make that choice. And so when I read those things from the TGA saying they have those reports on suicidal tendencies or self-harm, that I think we have to be incredibly careful monitoring that.
This reminds me too of all this body image sort of stuff. Have you heard of Body by Mark?
Body by Mark.
Body by Mark is this social media account. It's got like millions and millions of followers on social media.
Yeah.
He goes around the streets of, usually in the United States, but elsewhere in the world as well, interviewing people who are, I'm going to say objectively, very, very beautiful. Mostly men.
Yeah.
Built like tanks. Just look in fantastic shape. And they're all ages, like, you know, from their late teens right through to their 60s, 70s, in incredible shape. And he asks them, how do you keep in shape? And the answers are really interesting because, you know, it's basically like, you know, tell me your day on a plate.
Yes.
And these guys go, oh, yeah, I exercise, you know, X amount and I eat very lean thing or I don't eat red meat, I don't have dairy and da 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 da. No one talks about injectables. Very, very few of them talk about injectables.
Yeah.
And so there's a same,
but
different.
And you think they are, but you're saying that
you read the comments. You read the comments, right? People who know about this stuff. We wouldn't, you know, we can't objectively know this stuff, whether someone is taking.
So people who are working out are taking it to like shred.
To shred, to build, like to build muscle. And this has all sorts of implications, you know, for your kidneys, for your liver, for your general kind of mental health.
Yeah.
And you see what happens to some of these people when they kind of stop injecting and they decided to go natty or natural.
Natty.
Yeah, that's what it's called. Are you a natty bodybuilder or not natty?
But I would have thought not natty was like steroids and
stuff. Natural is like actually you're like eating your, you know, chicken breast and your broccoli and your rice and working out three times a day and whatever.
Huh.
Being not natural is where you're injecting all sorts of things.
Okay.
So it's a similar kind of thing here. This is about body image and to what extent you're willing to torture your own body to achieve an aesthetic outcome, which you're then kind of like, you know, maybe open about, maybe not open about.
Yeah. But then, but you're saying by they're not being open means there's a shame attached to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the shame?
I think Rose Stokes touches on this idea of what is ideal. And for men, what constitutes power? It's physical size, strength, muscle constitutes power and wellness. And I'm not quite sure that most of us are built for that sort of stuff.
Built for.
I'm not sure most of us are built for being 6'5 and, you know, twice my size.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a lot of effort.
It does.
Can you get
it
anything does. Else done in life? Also, I'd be hungry all the time and hangry. I guess you're chewing on protein.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a few ribs.
Lots of chicken breast and broccoli.
Well, look, there are adverse effects to this stuff, right, that people don't necessarily talk about that much. People do get nauseous and vomiting, diarrhea.
I think I've spoken about this on the show before. I went on one of those diets and this was, you know, partly just to kind of test myself and see whether I could do it.
Yeah.
And so I did shred and I looked incredible, but my gosh, I was just angry and hungry
just
all the
mean
time.
Just a horrible person.
I was very, I was very happy I did it, but it's no way to live for me personally. But some people, you know, value their aesthetics differently to what I do. So,
but if you're taking a Ozempic, doesn't it take away a lot of that stuff? Because you don't have to be thinking about it. You don't have to be depriving yourself.
Like, yeah, just, I don't know. Like, tell me, do your friends, so I know the handful of people I know who do take a Ozempic, they are drinking an awful lot of wine.
It's supposed to put you off, actually. The research shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
It puts you off alcohol. A lot of people have non-alcoholic things and so on. But you know that 15% of people don't respond to them.
Well,
and that's the tough one.
So this is like a live experiment.
Yeah.
No one knows. Are you going to like get kidney disease or mental health issues? Or maybe it'll work perfectly for you. Maybe you'll get pregnant. Maybe not.
Yeah.
But maybe it won't work at all.
It is rolling onwards with greater force and velocity, right? And all these broad changes, so all these different parts of the consumer economy, apparel, restaurants, groceries, gym, travel, are changing to adopt to people's changing appetites. People are buying more fruit and vegetables, more protein kinds of things, less snacks.
That's a good thing.
But because of the harmful side effects, including this indigestion we're talking about, loss of hair and muscle mass actually, there's all these sales for supplements and hair growth products have gone up.
Right. Where one door closes, another one opens.
Yeah, that's right. Which one will I go with? So they apparently, and this is a good thing, they report people that use it craving a crunchy carrot and tart kiwi over a salty chip.
Yeah, nah.
You don't believe it or you're projecting?
Well, I'm projecting. I'm 100% projecting. But I find myself, I have to like block my eyes when I walk through the chip aisle at the supermarket.
Yeah, I like a salty chip.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Okay, well.
But, you know, if that's what
also,
it's doing,
but
great.
You know what? All these, get this, the fashion industry. So people are gaining confidence, wanting to have new wardrobes. They've got this new, new body. So they're buying things but in smaller sizes. The number of small and extra small that have been purchased have rocketed up suddenly. It's kind of wild. And at the same time, the shaming goes on with the likes of official announcements from President Trump.
Yeah, so you're not going to believe this, but President Trump has announced that his government has negotiated huge price cuts on what he called the fat shot drug, Ozempic, and things like Wegovy. On the same day, the American government also announced that immigrants may be denied US visas if they are obese.
Can I say something unkind?
No.
Okay, are you sure?
I'm a bit scared.
He's not a lean man.
It's the aspiration that counts though, right?
I mean, natty, maybe. Well, it's kind of weird because I feel like there's a lot of shame going into that. And look, it is genuinely weird. Like we started off by talking about, I was this end of body positivity, and there are still pockets of body positivity around. Mm. It is genuinely strange to watch the women shrinking in front of our eyes. Now, for a long time, there was a thesis put up in The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf, who tracked over time women's body sizes. And her thesis was the closer the women came to power, the closer the women came to equal rights or any kind of opportunity in terms of public voice or economic earning ability, the smaller they were required to be, the more pressure there was on them to shrink and to fit a certain ideal in the public eye, like women's dress sizes shrank. And there's something really unnerving about watching this period when we know women's reproductive rights are being eroded, challenged. Women are being spoken about as little piggies and all manner of things, that they're kind of disappearing.
How much do you think the algorithm is responsible here. And I say the algorithm, like the big tech, whatever, because we are all seeing different things, right? So if Rose Stokes is looking to celebrities who have then shrunk in front of her eyes and she feels like her whole world is caving in because these parasocial relationships are not what she thought they were.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of other people out there who are doing body positive stuff and who are hitting different people's
feet. But imagine if you were attached to a whole bunch that suddenly were like, I've built my whole career. Like there's one woman who has had this whole account on being flat chested and how great it is and that's where she's going to be and you don't need it. Now suddenly she's gone and got a boob job and she's like, I guess I got bored.
Yeah.
And there is a sense of betrayal, but it's not just about being parasocial. It's about a movement that was gaining impetus and kind of mainstream power about saying it's acceptable to be a range of sizes and we shouldn't instill hatred in especially girls, also boys, but especially young girls. We should be just fully accepting that there are a range of body shapes and sizes. And then suddenly I can understand why you would feel that rug has been pulled out from under you.
It's funny, isn't it? This brings us back to the social media ban in Australia, which is kicking in now. And why young people are so impressionable and why this legislation aims to protect them. It's from exactly this sort of stuff.
Well, Skinny Talk. Have you seen any of the Skinny Talk stuff?
No, I'm not on TikTok. I'm scared of TikTok.
It's people like almost kind of angrily hectoring women about just getting it together and not eating and just being thin. All those things. Remember Kate Moss who famously said,
She was notoriously unhealthy. Though.
Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. It's that kind of vibe. And you're not a puppy. You don't need to reward yourself with food, right?
I am a puppy.
Everyone's
I just
a puppy.
Don't buy it.
Everyone's
I just
a puppy.
Don't
food
buy it.
Has to also be comfort and
joy,
some joy, exactly,
and company and companionship. Like that's what we do.
Yeah, I mean, in June, TikTok banned that hashtag.
Right.
For whatever purpose, those accounts are still there saying it was linked to unhealthy weight loss content. There was a woman who was quite famous for it, Liv Schmidt, 3-bite rule. Take 3 bites, that's all you need. It's kind of miserable, really, Skinny Talk.
That's a lot of admin, I feel.
It's really miserable. I don't know. I do think we're in the middle of a big social experiment and I do think we have to constantly monitor the impact on people's mental health and we do have to query the ideals that are constantly being put before us and how if we have an unrealistic ideal and then we're given a pharmaceutical solution and the people who are lost in all of this, who happen to look, be different way. You know, we're just kind of saying there's only a very limited way of looking and being acceptable and others who fall outside that should be ashamed and not allowed across national borders. I think we've got something to worry about. Right, Jez, if you're like the rest of us, there's a whole bunch of subscriptions that are creeping in. To your life.
We don't actually own anything anymore.
We don't own it.
Everything is just subscription, right? Yeah. Subscription based.
Except, yeah, even with books a lot of the time, which I think people should still buy. Anyway, so how do you manage all of that? Like how do you stay on top of it?
I am an absolute dictator in the way I manage subscriptions. Everything is diarized, calendarized. They go to specific credit cards, bank accounts, whatever.
All of them.
All of them. And I know when they expire. I know who I spoke to. I make detailed notes. And let me tell you where this started. So I had a membership at a gym years ago. This is a well-known international chain of gyms.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of other people have had similar experience with this mob. I went to cancel my membership because I was moving back to Australia.
Oh, yeah. Gyms can be terrible.
And they said to me, sure, you can cancel, but you need to produce the original carbon copy document from your sign up. And I went...
Stop.
Try me. I've got it filed away. Date, time, place, and your name. And I took that in. My partner at the time, not so organized, took weeks to cancel it. And they said, oh, we can't cancel your gym membership until you produce this magical document.
Were you feeling a little bit smug, Jez?
I was very, very smug about it. But this is the thing. It shouldn't be this hard.
No.
For people to just simply pull out of a thing that was very, very easy to sign up for.
Exactly. That's what's happening, isn't it? Is it that what you experienced is happening in the digital realm more and more as we're becoming more reliant on subscriptions there.
That's right. And there's a lack of contact with someone face-to-face, so you can't even have the argument with someone face-to-face. It's literally computer says no.
Yeah.
And you're scrambling to find a way to, you know, reach a call center or go through some convoluted
but you know what?
Digital process in order to cancel a subscription.
That frustration you were feeling, well, you didn't feel, but you observed in your then partner.
Yes.
Is the worst.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. And it's, and that feeling is what they capitalize on. Because, like, I couldn't be bothered. Couldn't be bothered to be in a queue. Couldn't be bothered to call up. Couldn't be bothered to line up. My life is worth more than that. I'm just gonna, you know, soak up the expense or deal with it down the track.
So why are we talking about this? Because the government has now come out with an idea.
Yes.
To make it easier to cancel subscriptions, because Andrew Lee, who's the Assistant Minister for Productivity, Competition, Charities and Treasury, has given this speech titled Ending the Unfair Tricks and Traps That Exploit Consumers. It's about basically stopping people getting ripped off and what he describes as dark patterns in subscription retail.
Tell me what the dark patterns are.
So these include things like nudging people into ongoing subscriptions.
Where so you just want a one-off.
You want a one-off. And then, but you've got to sign up, you've got to go over the most extraordinary amount of detail, like your date of birth, your credit card number, your address, your postcode.
I tried to buy some chocolate honeycomb yesterday, and then what am I date of birth? I was like, why?
Why?
But you know, and I also wanted to get just some one-off sheets for making soap.
Yes.
Put in a soap dispenser. I could only subscribe. And I'd gone all the way through so they would send me one a month.
And then
I ended up subscribing.
And then next minute, you're getting emails and SMSs. Oh, we've got a Black Friday sale.
Now I've got
just
about 30,
non-stop
by the
contact.
Way.
Like, stop being so needy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew Lee says, the government wants to make it easier for consumers to turn off things like auto-renewal during the initial purchase period and to put some guardrails around how much information people are compelled to hand over and how people are told about how the cancellation process works. So basically, if you sign up very easily, you should be just as easily be allowed to withdraw from a service.
Yes. And, you know, if they want automatic renewal, they should be contacting you and saying it's about to renew.
Yes.
Some do, but not all of them do. Now, I was interested in how Lee said the techniques that they use exploit well-known cognitive biases, loss aversion, optimism bias and inattention and fatigue. And also I'm too busy.
Yeah, 100%.
Just get out of my face. And why is this so hard? Oh, wait a second, I'll deal with this later.
So there are some figures from the Consumer Policy Research Centre that found that 3 in 4 Australians with subscriptions have had a negative experience when trying to cancel that subscription.
Yeah.
You did this recently, didn't you? Didn't you have just that random food showing up at your doorstep?
Oh, yeah. I'd gone on and set up an account on a food delivery system. And then I was looking at ones that I might have, but I never went through, I never checked out, and they just started arriving at my place that weekend. I fed many, many people that week.
You're
one
just
night
a
I was
soup
cooking,
kitchen
I cooked 18 meals from 3 separate boxes. My daughter thought it was so funny because I'd so stupidly got into this whole thing. And then they came for 3 more weeks until I finally got out of it.
But what was the process of cancelling?
You know what they did? It's something that this is a funny term, where they call confirm shaming. Are you sure you'd like to? Do you really want to get out of this? We'll give you a pretty little sticker. You might miss us. And then you have to go through about 4 things. Yeah, and I'm really sure. And then I get more determined as time goes on. Like, yes, I want you to get out of my face. Yeah. And that, oh, now I got a phone call from them yesterday. They miss me. Get out of my face.
This is like a major breakup with someone you never asked to date.
I know.
Now, the government's also going after this other aspect. It's sort of similar in the same vein. It's called drip pricing, where you go to buy a thing like, you know, like a concert ticket or an airline ticket at an advertised price, and then they say, oh, you'd like a seat. Oh, yeah, that'll be an extra charge. Yeah, you want to use a bathroom?
Oh, inside the stadium.
Oh. You want food? Oh, that's an extra thing. And so the government's trying to make it easier that you get a price up front and that is the thing that you pay, rather than this thing called drip pricing where you get drip, 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 and you end up paying much more than what you'd initially bargained for.
Mm. I think Lee mentioned specific cases, Adobe and Amazon Prime, and the US authorities called them, because there were some cases around it, Iliad flows, long multi-step gauntlets designed to frustrate cancellation. And I actually do think it really does work. So Amazon Prime was busted for this. In 2021, the Norwegian Consumer Council filed a legal complaint against them after they found out to subscribe to Prime, it just took a couple of clicks, but at least seven to unsubscribe. Actually, I've had that happen before with trying to unsubscribe from things, and I just genuinely get lost. I don't know where to do and how to do it. And then you just run out of time. And so they were testing the law on dark patterns. And in the end, the European Commission negotiated a settlement with Amazon to make it significantly easier for customers in the European Union to unsubscribe from these accounts.
Yeah, so Australia is actually considered quite behind in all of this, because in the UK, the Parliament's got this Digital Markets Competition and Consumers Act of 2024, which has had amendments in place to strengthen the enforcement. This is part of the key as well, enforcement, right?
Yes.
You can make all sorts of laws, but how are you going to enforce it? So the enforcement of UK consumer protection laws by the local authority to address things like drip pricing and to require businesses to make it easier for consumers to opt out. Same with the EU. They've been doing it since 2005 to deal with unfair business practices. And in the US as well, the Junk Fee Prevention Bill requires merchants to clearly and conspicuously display the actual total price of a product or service at the point in time where the price is first displayed to consumers.
Yes, good. We need that. I like how people have described it as a Hotel California situation.
Yeah, right.
You can check out, but you can never leave.
And it's such a lonely place.
Okay, some of the ways they could reform that here. Ask businesses to notify customers before a free trial ends. Mm-hmm. Remove unreasonable barriers to cancellation. Just make it simple and easy, especially for people who aren't literate. I mean, there'll be so many older people that would be busted in this. Mm-hmm. And as you've said, all transaction fees up front from the start. So he's saying there'll be tough civil penalties and regulators are going to have expanded powers to enforce the laws.
And I think the enforcement bit is the key, because we've got all sorts of, you know, laws that are, you know, kind of on paper look like good ideas, but they have to be enforceable. So I think that will be the kind of the magic ingredient to make sure that businesses, retailers are held to account on this stuff and prosecuted accordingly if they make it too tough for consumers.
You know what I want to see them to do next is false consumer reviews.
We've got a whole...
I know.
This is a whole show. There is a cafe near my home.
Yes.
It is under construction and already has incredible reviews.
Okay. We've got to crack down
cooked.
On this.
It is so cool.
We need good review science.
Yeah.
And also, I really feel amazed by your approach.
Oh, yeah.
I'm maybe down the opposite end of the spectrum. I'm going to create
people
the
think
first
I'm very nice until they
life.
Pick a fight with me.
And then you'll have all the documentation in a diary.
Okay, Jules, time for pick of the week.
So, Jez, I'm just going to play you a sound and I want you to tell me what you think it is.
Is that someone laughing or crying?
Crying.
Crying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Crying. Indonesian conservationist Septian Andriki. It's thick in a Sumatran rainforest. And what do you think he's just seen?
I don't know. A bird? A tree?
A plant in bloom.
Oh!
And he has spent 13 years looking for a 23-hour journey.
Wow.
Risking tiger attacks, nearly dead phone batteries. I love how he parallels those two things. Almost got killed by a tiger and my phone ran out. Its scientific name is Rafflesia hasselti. Now,
I know this flower.
How?
Because
this is one
I grew up in Malaysia.
Oh, there's many different kinds of Rafflesia.
Oh, is there? Right.
Yes.
So this is a particular one, right.
But this is a very particular kind.
But this is
kind.
The giant flower that smells like rotting meat, right?
It's called, the stinking corpse lily.
Yeah.
The flowers can grow up to a metre in width. They weigh more than 6 kilograms. And this one is the rarest of the species. Hardly anyone has seen it.
Wow.
It's kind of white with these big red spots and then the reverse of that on the petals. Deki started working with another researcher from the University of Oxford, the director of the Botanic Gardens, during the pandemic. And they found a few species in 2021 while they were on the research expedition in the rainforest, but they couldn't find this particular one. And then a ranger in West Sumatra sent them this photo and they were like, wait a minute. Now, to know the unlikelihood of this, the buds of the flower take about 9 months to mature.
Yes.
Once it's open, it only stays open for a few days.
Yes.
So it was this very tricky location to get to. There's tigers, there's rhinos. They think more tigers will have seen the flower than people. So they got a special permit and they got a ranger and they went to the flower and it wasn't in bloom. It took them 23 hours. And he felt so down and he said, look, I came closer to the flower and I said, let's just wait here for an hour. Under the moonlight that night, it began to bloom.
Yes, because it blooms at night. It famously does this thing. You wait and wait and wait.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of the night one night, it just pops open, five big petals, and then it's just there for a few days.
Yeah.
Absolutely reeks, apparently.
Exact moment. And he broke down. In tears.
How lovely.
But, you know, there's something so beautiful about the passion and the journey. And I know I've said this to you offline before, but one of the things about Instagram that drives me crazy, you never see the process. We always see, oh, here's a, you know, man who like photographed, you know, lions in Africa for three decades. And here's his best three photos, which took, you know, sleepless nights and physical discomfort and just incredible effort to get them. And we flick past them in a second. And what we see in this man's kind of breaking down is just that quest. It's a quest. It's
the culmination of this waiting and the pursuit.
And the rarity and the possibility and how, you know, it's like a moment of awe for him, right? It was just this incredible magic. So I loved that moment.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. What about you, Jez?
Okay, so I'm quite sure you've come across this story, but I wanted to share it with our listeners who may not have heard.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, and his partner, Jodie Hayden, got married last weekend. Mm-hmm. Secret ceremony, no one knew until after the ceremony had been held. And the florist who did the bouquet, you've heard this story?
Yes, I love this.
Her name's Lulu Moxham. She's a florist in Canberra. She had a big weekend preparing, you know, flowers for weddings and, you know, other occasions. And she spoke to James Finlay on ABC Radio Canberra a few days ago. And she said she was sitting on her deck, sipping a glass of wine after a rough weekend doing flowers for various events. And a friend calls her up and says, I'm quite sure that's your bouquet that Jodie Hayden is carrying at the Prime Minister and Jodie Hayden's wedding.
Beautiful bouquet.
Yeah. And so this was a low-key affair. It was held at the lodge, very little fuss about it. And so a man goes into Lulu Moxham's florist and says, we want a teardrop bouquet. And Lulu goes, oh, they're really hard and they're really fiddly and it's been a really big weekend and I just didn't want to do it.
Not doing it, so, mate. No.
So this man, who she believes was Jodie Hayden's brother, may or may not have been the brother, who knows, said, I'm really sorry. You do you, whatever you want. Here's some chocolates. And, you know, he hugged her.
I thought that was incredible.
I know. It's so lovely.
He didn't say, listen, just so you know, just on the down low.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know who I am?
No. He was like, oh, whatever you can do.
You do you.
Here's some chocolate. That is incredible.
And so she says, I think it was the chocolates and the hug that did it.
There's a lesson in that.
She did do this lovely teardrop bouquet. Next minute, it's making history because it's the bridal bouquet of the first couple of Australia.
We need the story of the brother. Whoever you are, please come on, not stupid.
We would love to find out the backstory.
I think that's gorgeous.
It's so cute, isn't it?
Yeah, bless her. All right, Jez, before we go, look, if you have got a super dodgy subscription story, we're all ears. Not stupid at abc.net.au. If you have a spreadsheet like Jeremy, or like Michael who does social media, I can't believe there's more than two people in the world that do this.
Do you know what the irony of this, Jules, is? What? We're about to ask our listeners to write into us.
And
we're
subscribe.
Very needy. We'd actually love to know what you think about the show because we're looking ahead to 2026 and we want to make a better pod for you. We'd love to know what you like about the show, what you think we could improve. The link to our audience survey is in the show notes. Please give it a click. It'll take like half a minute for you to just click through. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. And promise we won't be texting you after that.
Or a call in the middle of the night.
Saying, we miss you. Come back.
Well, dropping over home-cooked meals, that's kind of good. Good to see you, Jez.
Our producers are Madeline Jenner and Cinnamon Nippard. Jules, see you next week.